Hello and welcome back to the Vox Pop WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. While the Adirondacks are known as one of the most beautiful and pristine landscapes in the world, there are some issues unique to the area. This is going to be a great show, by the way, folks. Officials and residents of the park area must balance their needs as homeowners and business people with the preservation of their environs. Joining us today to discuss the issue of land use, park recreation, and greenhouse gas reduction in the Adirondack Park are John Sheehan, Communications Director with the Adirondack Council, and Fred Monroe, Executive Director of the Adirondack Park Local Government Review Board. Gentlemen, welcome to the Vox Pop.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you.
I'm delighted that you're here. It's a very important conversation. Okay, so let's do it this way, if it's all right with you. John Sheehan, there's a news release I hold in my hand now from the Adirondack Council. Perhaps you could tell us what this is all about.
Well, Alan, it's really a reflection of the fact that the rules and regulations for the Adirondack Park, for developing in the Adirondack Park, were created back in 1971 during the Nelson Rockefeller administration.
Yeah.
And that was a time of great change and environmental consciousness around the country. At the same time, the federal government was creating the Environmental Protection Agency, passing the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act. And here in New York, we created the Department of Environmental Conservation in 1970. And a year later, the rules and regulations for developing in the Adirondacks, known as the APA Act, the Adirondack Park Agency Act. We have not had a serious revision of those rules and regulations ever. There were a couple of minor tweaks in 1978 that changed the way things operate in the park a little bit, but in general made the park agency slightly weaker in its ability to enforce its law. Over the years, we've seen that the park agency's rules are good at some things, but not very good at others. And really what we're seeing now is that wildlife habitat, water quality, and the forest health, the unbroken forest, the backcountry, are really in peril now. And because of the park agency's inability to require modern scientific standards, the agency is essentially approving projects that it probably shouldn't be, and in some cases is simply waving its hand and not taking jurisdiction over issues that it really should be delving into and dealing with. I think right now what we're proposing is that we get a conversation started and talk both at the Adirondack Park Agency about what can be done administratively to make changes that better protect the environment but don't put unreasonable demands on the economy at the same time.
Let me get this straight, John. You guys are the advocacy group for the Adirondacks.
Yes.
To keeping things tight, for being environmental and the like.
That's correct, Alan.
And the agency, of course, is the ones who administer the law.
Right. The Adirondack Council is a private, not-for-profit organization.
Yeah.
Our mission is to protect the natural character and ecological integrity of the park, but a lot of our time is spent as a watchdog of the agency and being both its best friend and severest critic.
Gotcha. I know your work. Now, we'll go to Fred Monroe, Executive Director of the Adirondack Park Local Government Review Board. Fred, I take it you're on the other side.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so tell us where you disagree with John.
Well, we think the Adirondack Park Agency has been very, very strict, particularly in the last few years until the latest chairman. And there have been some serious revisions in the regulations, really to the detriment of pre-existing landowners. In 2008, the shoreline regulations were amended, and we think that should have happened by a legislative action, not by a regulatory action. And they took away the right of pre-existing shoreline lot owners to expand back up and to the side, and they eliminated the natural subdivision rule where if your property is split by a railroad or a power line right away or a highway, you would think you have two lots. And that was always the APA's rules, but they repealed that in 2008. So they've done things that we think should have been done by legislative action. Maybe some of them good ideas, but they should have been handled by the legislature, not by administrative regulation.
But Fred, basically, just so the people who are listening now get in on this,
right?
You represent the thinking of many of the people who own land and operate businesses in the
correct
Adirondacks, and you want more, naturally. John Sheehan, on the other hand, represents the pristine, you know, sort of environmental groups who may not live there, but who want to keep it as clean and as the way that it's always been. And there lies the tension, right?
Well, yes, we represent local government and the residents, and they realize that we have 2.7 million acres of forever wild forest land. We have another 700,000 acres that's covered under conservation easement, and we think there may be some room for some small additional purchases, but we think it's pretty well protected as is, along with the regulations of the park agency.
So how far does it go? Does it go as far as we think that businesses who want to take more lumber out should be allowed to do that?
Well, logging has always been a traditional industry in the Adirondacks, but we've lost that over the last 150 years with 2.7 million acres of land acquired by the state and made forever wild. And there's now a proposal for another 80,000 acres to be purchased, taken out of production with the loss of substantial jobs in a time when the Cuomo administration is trying to encourage more jobs, to stimulate the economy.
One last question here, Fred. Are you pleased with the present governor, Andrew Cuomo, and his appointments to the agency which govern all of this, the Adirondack Park Agency?
Yes, he's only made two appointments since he became governor, and we've been pleased with both of those appointments, and I think the council has also.
Okay, interesting. Is that true, John?
You have... we were pleased with those appointments. I have some contentions with what Fred said earlier.
Go ahead. I want to get the call soon.
Sure.
1-800-348-2551. Go ahead, John.
Well, I think it's important to point out that about three quarters of the Adirondack Council staff lives and works in the park every single day. The forest preserve is not what caused a decline in the timber industry, nor has the continued purchase of forest preserve in the park. The real decline in employment came as a result of mechanization. There are very few crews going out into the woods with chainsaws anymore. Nearly all timber harvesting is being done by very heavy equipment, essentially the feller buncher, which can grab a tree, cut it off at ground level, strip the branches off of it, and hold it up straight while it does the same to another one, put a bunch of them together, and slide it onto the truck with nobody having to ever let the tree hit the ground.
What are the environmental considerations when that happens?
Well, the disturbance to the forest can be much greater. It really depends on the care taken by the people using the heavy equipment. Since it always took skidders and trucks and that sort of thing to get the logs out since we stopped using horses and sleds, there is some disturbance on forest roads. But in the forest, if you're careful, do a nice job, you can harvest with mechanical equipment and not harm the environment, certainly not in a permanent way.
So what's the CO2 issue here?
Well, that's not really a part of this plan. That's something I wanted to talk about later on, a separate thing having to do with the regional greenhouse gas initiative.
Go ahead, because you may never get there. The phones are going to start to ring, and I want to give Fred a chance to come back on here.
Well, I think that the state's participation in the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative is extremely important to the Adirondack Park. This is the only government-sanctioned pollution control program for carbon dioxide in the state, in the country, I should say. And there are 10 states participating in the Northeast. We'd love to see this expanded around the country. It's been in place about 3 years now. There's been trading for carbon credits, and the companies have to buy credits from the government in order to put any carbon out of their smokestack. Our concerns have been that there are too many allowances on the market, that these allowances are essentially forming a glut right now that's preventing the price from rising on the market, so that if the governments take away some of the rights to pollute.
Explain to people, John, what an allowance is.
An allowance is permission to put 1 ton of carbon dioxide out of your smokestack. And
you buy that from the...
We are competing against the power companies at the auctions. We're buying
allowances. Yes, we know that at WAMC because, as you know, we've been...
You've been helping us retire them, that's right. And that's going to become more effective as a way of actually cleaning up the environment as the government gets a better handle on how many allowances it can put on the market each year. There are a limited number, but if they put too many on the market, there's very little incentive to clean up. So we have to encourage them to start reducing the total number they make available to the power companies more drastically, so that the price of carbon will rise above $2 per ton.
Okay, Fred, I know that I'm not being fair to you. Give us whatever you want to say and do it in 2 minutes.
Okay. Well, we have some problems with the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. In effect, it's an artificial cap and trade program, which we feel is taxation without representation, because this is something that was created by the executive. Governor Pataki signed it. It was never addressed by the legislature. We think that environmental policy like that, while it may be well-intentioned and maybe it's even a good policy, but it should be addressed by our legislature, not just signed by the governor.
I'm sorry, who is we in this case, Fred? Because I've heard a lot of local government officials say that they're very much in favor of the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative.
I think many local governments are concerned about the way it was done, and there is litigation that challenges that. We're the only state, New York is the only state out of the 10 states that signed on to this that did it just with executive officer signature, no legislative action. We think it's a violation of the separation of powers.
Okay, yes. I got the governmental side. You've said that a couple of times, but the main point is you also said you thought it might even be a good idea, but you don't like the way it was done.
Yeah, well, there are some problems with it as a scheme, because it leads to speculation. The money goes to NYSERDA, which can use it for any number of purposes not directly related to retiring carbon, and did use it under Governor Patterson. They used it to balance the budget, $90 million.
Yeah. So. Okay, guys, I'm so sorry. I know this is so exciting. I'm delighted you're both here. This is going to be a terrific day. 1-800-348-2551. Phones are beginning to ring. If you're there, stay put. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Paradise Copies, Northampton, Massachusetts, providing printing design for customers for over 20 years. From digital to offset, color copies, scans, logos, and more, ParadiseCopies.com. Buckley Beef, Valley Falls, New York, providing all-natural grass-fed beef, steaks, sausages, hamburger, available at McCarroll's Village Butcher, Del Mar, BuckleyBeef.com. Richards Fuel and Heating, East Hampton, Massachusetts, offering installation of air conditioning systems to the Pioneer Valley, now expanding into the Westfield area, RichardsFuel.com. Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years, QFCC.com. And 7th Generation eco-friendly products from dish liquid to detergent to diapers. 7thGeneration.com for more information. Caring today for 7 generations of tomorrow.
Okay, guys. Everybody, welcome back to the Vox Pop. We're talking the Adirondacks today. It's a terribly important issue. With us are John Sheehan, Communications Director with the Adirondack Council, and Fred Monroe. John is basically for tightening things up and making it even harder to basically, shall we say, pollute?
To develop pristine land in the Adirondacks.
Okay. And Fred Monroe, Executive Director of the Adirondack Park Local Government Review Board, and he represents a side which is saying, hey, enough is enough. Let people make a living. Let's open this up a little bit more. Okay, so that's what you got. Let's go to Abigail in Kingston. Abigail, thanks so much for staying with us and for your patience. I appreciate it. Go ahead, Abigail.
Thank you, Alan, so much for taking my call. I have a whole bunch of things to say, and I will try to be as brief as possible. And I will talk like a Russian, zigzagging a lot. Thank you for alternative radio and the notion of common good, common water. Let me just, what my concern is privatizing. That's what seems mostly to be happening. The true law, from my point of view and many other people, is land, air, and water. And these things all seem, we keep forgetting that there's not plenty, that there's scarcity because of greed, because of wanting to privatize water, to wanting to privatize land, wanting to privatize air, which we can't, but we do privatize the airways in terms of media control.
Sure.
Anyway, I could go on for a long time.
Okay, no, I want you to ask as provocative a question of our two wonderful guests as you possibly can. What is it that they should tell you?
Well, I believe in protecting the natural resources. So I want to hear that this is going to be protected. I mean, when Reagan took over, deregulation was the name of the game. And that was really a ridiculous thing. And I think that all of the stuff that was done at that time is now coming back to bite our asses.
Okay. Well, the telephone number here is 1-800-348-2551. Stay right there. Okay, oh. Fred, I think basically...
can I say one other thing? Jobs. Get more forest rangers out there. Educate the public. Take the children into the Adirondacks. Do field trips. Educate us. Make sure, I'm an educator. I have been, and I'm trying to be once again. But it's very, really important.
Okay, we got you, Abigail.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. I appreciate your call very much. Let's go to Fred, because I think, basically, I think you're challenging Fred here a little bit. Fred?
Yeah, I think that tourism is extremely important to the Adirondacks. Protection of the resources is important. We know we have 3.4 million acres that are covered under either forest preserve or conservation easements, and half of the land that's left out of the 6 million acres is zoned 42 acres per principal dwelling or any kind of principal building.
So we have a lot of protection. In order to have a house, you have to have 42 acres. Is that what you're saying?
On average. It's not a minimum lot size. It's an average density, but it works out.
How much more do people need? I have to interrupt you for a minute.
Don't.
Okay.
Stop.
Oh, Alan.
No,
go ahead.
No, stop. Okay. So that's Fred. Fred, any more on that?
No, just that tourism is important, and I think local governments in the Adirondacks recognize that it's important to protect the resources. But we think we've done a really good job with that. We haven't done as good a job taking care of the residents and their need for a strong economy.
Okay. And John, Shin?
Well, I think there are things that the Park Agency and state government can do to improve both situations, actually. The shortcomings at the Park Agency really have been in the backcountry, not just asking for large lots, but the thing that they need to be doing is protecting the forestry potential of that area and the farming potential by not allowing it to be broken up into tinier and tinier pieces. In other words, wildlife that lives in the wildest parts of the Adirondack Park can't handle human intrusion. They don't like artificial light. They don't like the noise from motor vehicles.
I got a bear that comes
around
to my house every night in the middle of Great Barrington.
We know what he's after, don't we, Alan? But what we're trying to get a handle on is the fact that there are some places where residential development should be declared inappropriate in the Adirondacks, where there should be only use of the open space potential of that area, whether it's farming, forestry, or open space recreation, that is the highest and best use to that property, and it should remain that way. Instead, what we're seeing is, because these rules and regulations are so weak and outdated, development occurring in inappropriate locations and in ways that causes the most damage to the landscape in terms of what wildlife can remain. We just had a huge development project approved by the Adirondack Park Agency. It sprawls across 6,200 acres. That's half the size of the island of Manhattan, to build 700 homes. That is an awful lot of land to consume. During the adjudicatory hearing for that permit application, we presented a consultant that redesigned the project onto 1,500 acres with the same number of housing units, the same profit for the applicants and developers, but it used up only one quarter of the open space that this project was approved to use by the Park Agency. The APA liked our idea, but they couldn't implement it. They did not have the authority to tell the developer, you must do this.
How did they get that authority?
They have to get it from the state legislature.
Well, you guys have the same. Abigail, stay there for a minute. You're not a dog. You started this. This is a call-in show. We got two experts here. We're going to let them answer. Don't ever say how we ever called you a dog. Woof. Okay, so now, the both of you have mentioned the same thing, that you don't get what you need from the state legislature, which is interesting, and that basically it has come back down to the executive authority,
right,
who sort of has running things. Abigail, I know you're not going to like this, but I'm going to let you go because I want, there are other people on the phone.
Okay, I will open up the space. I believe in open space.
Open space, Abigail.
Okay,
you're,
be well, all of you.
Me
and
too.
John, thank you very much. And I was in the tour business at one point, so I know about tourism. Thank you very much.
And thank you, Abigail. Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling.
Okay. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Scott in Ballston Spa. Scott, you're on.
Hi, Ellen. How are you today?
So far, so good. Are you going to ruin it?
No, hope not.
Okay, go ahead.
I don't live in the Adirondacks, but I visit there frequently, and I like to ski up there. I know one of the issues that's been discussed off and on is wind power in the park, and I seems to me like it would make a lot of sense to generate local power within the park. Done carefully, I think it would have some advantages. And I guess the a secondary question would be about cell coverage and kind of safety issues related to the lack of cell coverage up there.
Right. We do remember that story of the poor guy driving off the road and dying because he couldn't make it out of the car. Those are two very interesting issues. John first?
Sure. In terms of cell coverage and other communications technology in the park, I think there's been a lot of progress made in the last 10 years.
But were
considerable
you guys
progress
it
in the
were
last
you guys
five.
Against it in the beginning?
No, actually, what we were trying to do is find ways for the technology to fit into the landscape.
Okay.
That we wanted, along the Northway, for example, we had helped the State Office for Technology develop a plan that would use short poles and connect all the way from the Lake George region to Plattsburgh, a seamless coverage plan. And that was approved 4 years before that unfortunate gentleman died on the side of the highway. The money was never developed to bring it forward, and we could not get the cell companies to agree to cooperate on this program. So eventually, Governor Spitzer had to twist Verizon's arm and get them to take over filling in the blank spots on the Northway. But the problem of not having cell coverage throughout the park is one that we encounter with trying to get services to people in the Adirondacks all the time, and that is that they live too far apart. Because we don't have good local planning in the Adirondacks, there's no incentive to build in the communities of the park, and there's no disincentive to build way outside. So what we get is sort of a low-density sprawl across the landscape that eats up resources because the communities can't afford to keep paying more and more money to bring those services farther into the woods.
Okay, John Sheehan, could you answer the other part of the question about
sure.
wind power?
Wind power is something that we had taken a very, very hard look at in terms of where it might be appropriate in the Adirondacks and where it might not be. I can tell you that a mountaintop is a terrible place to build a power plant, which is where most of our choices are in the Adirondacks. The weather is awful. You have too much wind most of the time, and that the blades would get going so fast that you'd have to slow them down or stop them. A lot of ice and other potential difficulties, but keep in mind also that the Adirondack Park produces about 270 megawatts of electricity on a constant basis from, dozens of hydropower plants that have been built in the park over the last 150 years. So we are exporting electricity to the rest of the state
right
now.
The President of the United States and others have called for wind power in order to help with our power
issues. It's appropriate in some places, it is not in others. Now, New York State has not gone to the extent that other states like Massachusetts have of putting a map together saying, we can put it here, we're not going to put it here.
But
in the Adirondacks, what we're seeing is it's north of the park, we're seeing sort of a picket fence of 500 wind turbines there. West of the park on Tug Hill, another 300 or 400 over there. You have to remember that's where the electric infrastructure is too. Getting the power to the market is part of the equation here.
And that becomes problematic because
we don't have the high capacity wires in the park to get it out there, except in one location.
But if they wanted those high capacity wires,
well, you'd have to do an awful lot of environmental disturbance to bring them in.
Okay, that's your position. That's great. Thank you, John. Appreciate it, Fred.
Okay, with respect to the wind power, we think there's a unique situation in the Adirondacks, and there's a company interested in producing it. Barton Mines on Gore Mountain is interested in erecting 10 wind turbines, which local government strongly supports. It's on Gore Mountain, which has infrastructure. It has numerous towers already for the ski area and other telecommunications facilities. It has the roads to it because it's an abandoned garnet mine, and it also has the power lines. And so they've applied to the Adirondack Park Agency for towers to just explore the possibility in the wind resource, but they've really had a hard time with the park agency even getting those permits approved for the exploratory towers.
Okay, go ahead.
And so we think that's something that is a unique situation. It doesn't open the floodgates to wind turbines all over the Adirondacks, but it's just a unique place where it should be allowed. And it would help a struggling industry, this Barton Mines industry.
Let it be recorded that John Sheen is shaking his head vigorously.
Okay.
No, because I'm not going to let him say anymore.
Okay.
Because I want everybody to say.
And I want to talk about the cell towers also. Okay, on the cell towers, I would agree that we have made some progress on cell towers. It's in spite of a standard which the Adirondack Park Agency uses, that they have to be substantially invisible. And we have to remember that these cell towers are line-of-sight technology, so it's a real challenge to make something that's line-of-sight technology substantially invisible.
For those who are not familiar with line-of-sight means, there can be nothing between the antenna and you.
Right, that's
just
right.
Just like FM radio.
Yes, so basically the towers are right at the tree line, which does work to get this signal to the Northway, but we have numerous other state highways that could potentially be reached if the towers were higher, secondary roads, hamlets that desperately need it for economic development. And so that standard, we think, has been great. It's hard to pick out those cell towers. I've sat in on many of the APA meetings where they've approved them, and it's even difficult for me to find them later on once I'm driving up and down the Northway. So I think that's been successful as far as it's gone, but it has denied coverage to many other areas and secondary roads that would otherwise have them if you didn't have this substantial invisibility standard.
Okay, Scott, are you satisfied or do you want more?
Yep. No, I appreciate it.
And Scott, thank you so much for your call. It was a very good question. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay,
Bye.
Let's go to Bill in Albany, 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in now are excellent. I encourage you to do it. Okay, Bill, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I had a quick question for John Sheehan. It seems like the Adirondack Park Agency has just abandoned its core mission in the last several years. And what does he see as the way to fix that specifically? And if you could answer a second question, why does it seem like Governor Cuomo just doesn't care about the Adirondacks?
Good questions. I think that the Park Agency's core mission is one that a lot of people would have trouble defining right now. I mean, the standard that they have to apply is very subjective. They have to decide whether a project causes undue adverse impact to the environment. That is the standard in the law. It is very difficult for them, in the best of circumstances, to pick out the right borderline in that particular instance. And it's even harder when they've got a big project in front of them and an awful lot of people supporting that project who are calling for it to be approved. Really, what we'd like to see happen is the Park Agency's regulations be brought up to modern standards. There are dozens of other agencies that grew up in the APA's likeness over the years. The California Coastal Commission, New Jersey Pinelands Commission, they all have better rules for and regulations for development, better enforcement authority, greater jurisdiction. And they do a great job. But the Park Agency was the prototype, the very first of its kind in the country. And as a result, didn't get everything right the first time around. But it's time we had take up the opportunity
to
fix that.
Okay, let's go to the Governor Cuomo part of this.
The Governor Cuomo part, I think he has shown some interest in the Adirondacks. He's come up to vacation. He's come to visit. But I don't think he's had a chance yet to really set his mark on the environmental agencies that oversee the park. He picked a terrific commissioner in Joe Martens for the Department of Environmental Conservation, somebody with a long history in the Adirondacks and with the Open Space Institute, the Olympic Regional Development Authority. But he really hasn't had a chance to do much other than a couple of minor appointments to the Board of Commissioners at the APA and hasn't really put his mark on the place yet. So I'm hoping that he steps up and does that in the very near future.
Okay.
But couldn't he have done something in the budget process? Couldn't he have done stuff administratively if he'd actually been, like, interested in the park?
Well, I think he did some things, but clearly not as much as we would have liked him to do. He didn't raid, for example, the Environmental Protection Fund, which is new for the last three governors did, but he hasn't really increased the amount that he's setting aside, the Environmental Protection Fund, in the last couple of years. So as it, in terms of its spending power and its ability to do the job, it's actually diminished over the last
I have to give Fred a chance here. Fred?
Okay, well, I think we support what the governor has done with respect to his appointments. We were pleased with the appointment of Joe Martens. He's someone that's worked with local government for over 20 years that I'm aware of, and he's very knowledgeable on the Adirondacks. So we're pleased with that appointment. We're pleased with the appointment of Lonnie Elrick as the chair of the park agency and Craig Sherman as one of the commissioners. And also...
Well, if you're pleased with it, does that mean, and I don't want to speak for Bill, but does that mean, since you guys are for basically some deregulation, that you think these guys who the governor appointed are in the same camp?
No, not at all. No, I think we're just interested in a balanced approach. That when Governor Rockefeller signed the APA Act, he specifically said that he wanted balance between the needs of the residents for a strong economy and the needs to protect the environment of the park. And that's what we're looking for, is just a fair balance. And we think that it has been skewed many times in the past, and we're happy that it seems to be more balanced now.
Okay. Hey, Bill, thank you for the call. We have to take a short break, and we thank you for calling. It was a great question. Thanks again. 1-800-348-2551. If you call right now, you're in. 1-800-348-2551.
Support for WAMC comes from Fleet Feet Sports, Colony, New York, locally owned retail shop providing footwear and apparel for runners, walkers, and triathletes in and around the capital region. FleetFeetAlbany.com. Laurie Stilwell, CPA, PC, providing tax and accounting services for businesses and their owners in Saratoga Springs and beyond. StilwellCPA.com. The Blue Bonnet Diner, Northampton, Massachusetts, since 1950, offering breakfast, lunch, and dinner, banquet facilities seating 150, banquet menus, bar services, and dance floor. BlueBonnetDiner.net. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, glaucoma management, and specialty contact lens fitting. 845-336-6310. And Stonely Burnham, Greenfield, Massachusetts, a multicultural school offering the International Baccalaureate Diploma Program, boarding and day for girls in grades 7 through 12. sbschool.org.
And we are back, and we're thankful that you're all here. We have two wonderful guests with us today, because this is a major issue. It's the kind of thing that WAMCers love to talk about and consider, because it really is our environment, and it is always, there's always attention on these kinds of things, and it's well worth it to hear everybody out. Let's go to Bob in Cambridge, New York. Okay, Bob, you're on.
Yeah, hi, Alan. I cringe sometimes at what has gone on in this world in my 63 years. I grew up in New Jersey, which was the Garden State at one time. I guess they still call themselves that, but they're not anymore. I've seen development upon development upon development occur, and I just ask the question, when is it going to end? We have 7 billion people on the face of the earth now, twice what the population was about 20 or 30 years ago. And, you know, every time I hear somebody talking in favor of growth and development, I say, you know what? It's like a pair of pants, this earth of ours, right? It's like you just got one size, and you can just fill it so much until it bursts at the seams. And I was always under the impression that Teddy Roosevelt started this whole Adirondack Park after seeing the devastation that occurred back in the 1890s or whatever when it was laid to waste, and you can see it in a diorama in the State Museum. But, you know, I constantly cringe when I hear this. We have to have a balance between development and economic interests and the environment. Well, you know what? Without the environment, we don't have anything else. And I think everybody is starting to appreciate that a little bit with the weather changes, whatever. But that's my question. How can you constantly say it needs to be addressed, the balance of environment with growth?
Well, actually, Bob, both of our people have said something like that. So, but let's go to. Something. I'm assuming it's Fred that you want to talk to first. Fred.
Okay. Thank you for your question. You know, the Adirondack Park is 6 million acres. It's 20% of the state. The state has a population of about 19 million, and the Adirondacks has a population of 130,000. And I think there's a reason for that, and it's been a lot of the policies that have been to protect the environment, many of which we support in local government. But there's also a strong need for the residents to make a living. There's a strong need for jobs. And we seem to be losing that battle. There's only two counties that are wholly within the Adirondack Park. One is Hamilton County and the other is Essex. And Hamilton County, if you look at the population statistics in the 2010 census and projections that were recently done by Cornell, they're in serious trouble. The projections are they're going to lose half their population in the next 30 years. So something needs to be done to replace those jobs that were in the timber industry, that were in the mining industry, that have been lost because the state has bought all the land and the mining because of factors in the world economy. We've lost the extractive industries, which maybe is a good thing.
Yeah, extractive meaning like mining.
Yeah, mining and logging.
Mining, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
like those people need to make a living. They didn't move here. Many of them live there and have always lived there, and it's fair to them to be able to create a situation where they can make a living and have a job.
Well, most of those people were trappers. They were people who lived off the land and whatever. You know, and then something like NL Industries came in, and they were doing their mining up there, and then obviously the logging industry, and that attracted a lot of people. But, you know, these things, you know, you got to follow the work. You know, when GE sort of pulled out of Schenectady, a lot of people had to go elsewhere to look for jobs. And I'm saying maybe this is the same thing. There's no more mines, okay, so no more miners, you know? But people who started up there, you know, doing trapping, doing fishing, hunting, guiding, whatever, you know, that's
Bob,
what it all was.
Okay, yeah, Bob, good. No, that's okay, don't be sorry. It's a good question, but let me go to the other guest, John Sheehan.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I think that you have to take a look at what's happening around the Adirondack Park right now, and that the trends for population are going up, not down, and have been since 1970 when the first... just before the Adirondack Park Agency was created, you could see that, for example, between 1970 and 1990, Oneida County went up 33% in its population. Well, that's a pretty small part of the Adirondack Park. Washington County went up nearly as much. Hamilton County, between 1970 and 1990, gained 12% in terms of
population.
Okay, but
what is your position? They should stay out and they should stop.
Essentially, what Bob was pointing out was the fact that there is a transition now between extractive heavy industries to a tourism economy, and that does cause some changes in where people live, what kind of jobs they have, what kind of businesses they can start inside the park that will become successful. It is not profitable for big timber companies to own paper mills inside the Adirondacks anymore. It is not profitable to do a lot of mining in the Adirondacks, mainly because there are other places that have richer deposits and greater opportunities for wealth. But really, I think Bob makes a good point that this is a park. This is a place that for more than 100 years, the people of the state have been trying to give special protection to. And while it is the state's responsibility to care about what happens to the communities of the park, its first responsibility is to protect the environment, and that the communities, as they transition to a tourism economy, will find that they're going to do just fine. And
I don't want to give you a hard time, but what if, in fact, somebody wants to build a hotel for your tourists?
Mm-hmm.
Should they be allowed to?
Well, the park agency just approved a hotel as part of that big project in Tupper Lake. They approved two for a spot right next to Gore Mountain. Just 5 years ago. So
how many acres in the park?
6 million.
Okay.
But
yeah,
that sounds
like a lot, but it really isn't. It really isn't, you know, because in the context of things, you see the immense growth that's going on. Like I said, the world population has doubled in almost 20
years.
You did say it.
Hey, Bob, I'm going to try to give somebody else a chance. Thanks for
starting us off.
Appreciate it very much.
You're great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Let's go to Bart in Amherst, Massachusetts. We love to hear from Amherst. Go ahead. Go ahead, Bart.
Yeah, hi, Alan. Yeah. I did grow up in New York State and spent some time in the Adirondacks, and I've been rather dismayed at the amount of logging and so forth that's going on in there. admittedly with many fewer loggers because of these big bunching machines that was mentioned earlier. And it seems to me with the combination of the development which displaces forests permanently and the increase in logging and the fact that the logging is, from my perspective, almost all clear-cutting that's going on now. In other words,
Hold on one second, Bart. Both guys are shaking their heads. I just want to make sure that your facts are right.
I know why they're shaking their heads. That's because they don't understand.
Wait a second before you say don't understand. We got two experts. We got this environmental guy, John Sheehan, whose whole purpose is to keep it.
Why are they shaking their heads?
I don't know, John.
I'd say that the vast majority of the logging taking place in the Adirondacks is not clear-cut logging. That is generally the exception. You have to get a permit.
Bart.
There are methods that may look an awful lot like clear cutting, especially from a distance, especially the shelter wood technique. In some cases, the rules are abused. I can't argue with that. But in general, if people are following the regulations, there is not an awful lot of room for clear cutting without permission in the Adirondacks.
And Fred, why were you shaking your head?
Well, for the same reason. I mean, the Adirondacks has traditionally been selective cutting. Now, these timber investment management organizations have bought out a lot of the timber companies, and they have gone to some of this shelterwood cutting that John mentioned, which might look like clear cutting from a distance, but they do seem to be cutting it more aggressively than the paper companies used to.
That's true.
But I wouldn't agree that it's clear cutting.
Yeah, go ahead, Bart.
Okay,
very quickly.
What it is it's the clever terminology is being used. So you can be cutting, clear cutting, entirely cutting 5 acres, and calling it not clear cutting because there is a technical term for it that's a little different. Even though, from any rational perspective, you're clearing the forest. And I see that as clear cutting.
Okay, you made the point. It's made.
It's been a major change in the last few years from selective cutting to this new shelter wood, which is, for all practical purposes, if you look at it from the air, it's clear cutting, even though technically that's not the term they're using anymore.
Okay, Bart, stop.
If he's got examples for us, we'd love to hear about it. So, Bart, please, if you have anything you can report to us, give us a call at the Adirondack Council, and we'd be more than happy to
I hope
to
you
take
don't think I'm giving you the rush, Bart, but we want to try to get everybody in, and we only have a few minutes left in the whole show, okay?
Global warming, that's all.
Okay.
There's a relationship between this and global warming. The forest can't be carbon sink.
Indeed, there is.
They're being cut off.
Okay.
That's all.
Bart, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Let's go to Bill in Saratoga. Bill in Saratoga, we're trying to let everybody in. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, my issue is the hydro dam on Indian Lake. Indian Lake has a dam on there. It's been on there for years, and they have new technology now where they can put a small hydro dam on there that's not invasive. And I know the organization there that one of your guys speaking for blocked it. And my question is, if the dam has to be there anyways and they can do this small hydro dam that's very invasive, now that Indian Lake could get its power cheaply and they wouldn't have to fuel up some coal plant in Ohio that's going to send acid rain into the Adirondacks. And I think sometimes they reject stuff just because they don't want to set a precedent instead of looking at things on a case-by-case basis.
That's a very fair question. I just want to make sure. I guess in this case, we'd go to John first, who's the advocate for keeping things pure, as opposed to somebody like Fred, who is trying to keep a different kind of balance. John?
I believe what Bill's talking about is a dam that is an unusual one in that it's on the forest preserve. Which means that it's not just the people of Indian Lake that own the dam and the land around it. It's all 19 million New Yorkers. So there are some restrictions on what kinds of equipment can be installed and whether you need a constitutional amendment in order to do some of that.
Does the New York State Constitution provide for those protections?
New York State Constitution, Article 14, Section 1, known as the Forever Wild Clause, is essentially just two sentences long. It says the lands of the state now owned or hereafter acquired, constituting the forest preserve, is now set by law, shall forever remain wild forest lands. They can't be leased, sold, exchanged or taken by any person or corporation, and you can't destroy the timber. Okay. So very strict prohibition on commercial and personal use of what is the commons of the Adirondacks, the public forest preserve.
And yet we have a country that's really looking for energy right now, and Bill is making a point. Here's an easy one.
Well, I think it's a difficult situation. If it were not on the forest preserve, the dam would have its hydropower equipment in it right now, and it would be operating.
Okay, but let's go to Fred. Fred.
I think it just points up the need for a broader constitutional amendment. There's local governments all over the Adirondacks that have needs that are prohibited by the constitutional. For example, the town of Arrieta has 90% of its land in state forest preserve. Can't do any of five projects that they want to pursue, some of which have environmental benefits, like a sewer project around Paseco Lake. And there's been proposals to have a more blanket constitutional amendment to allow municipalities to buy some of the forest preserve and to use that money to buy lands that are better suited to be forest preserve. Actually, some of the middle managers at DEC support that because they have building lots in hamlets that are forest preserve. They have a dam in Indian Lake that's forest preserve. Mm-hmm. They have Scroon Manor, which had 160 buildings on it. It's in my town. It was a tremendous asset for the community. The state bought it. DEC says it's forest preserve, but the Office of Real Property Tax Services says it's not. They don't pay the taxes on it. The state doesn't
would
pay
New
the taxes
Yorkers,
on it.
Fred, I'm sorry to ask you this question, but would New Yorkers vote for such a constitutional amendment?
I think they would if they saw the needs of these communities and that the money that would be generated by it could be used for lands that are much, much better suited to be forest preserve rather than a huge resort with 160 buildings on it. Something that's more remote, something that's needed to connect the trail or to expand an area into a wilderness that's not large enough to be a wilderness.
We're really close to the end.
Okay.
The public has not been rarely receptive to very broad constitutional amendments that say, you know, sometime in the future we'd like to do something, so give us permission to do it now. What we've seen is that very narrowly drawn specific constitutional amendments for good reasons get approved in the Adirondacks. We had one in Arrieta not so long ago to expand the airport. That was 1995.
That was a New York State constitutional amendment.
All the voters approved it. There was another one.
Fred?
Well, it leads to just ridiculous constitutional amendments. One was in the town of Long Lake, the Racket Lake water supply. They needed 1 acre for a well. We had a constitutional amendment. All the people in the state had to vote on it at tremendous expense for 1 acre for a well.
Well, let me just say,
and the town still has not come up with the swap that was authorized.
Well,
public still hasn't been made whole yet.
Well, we do have a gigantic New York State Constitution. Yeah. Only about 6,000 words in the U.S. Constitution, and to plow through the state constitution is some chore. I wanted to thank our last caller, and let's go to Susan in Dutchess County. Susan, we only have a minute here. Go ahead.
One idea is that I think the DEC, well, obviously they need more money for everything, but a lot of the things that go on in the Adirondacks and the other parks, there's not enough enforcement, let alone, encouragement or cultivating kind of programs. They can't enforce the rules that they have now, and I certainly don't think they should. Maybe there should be some kind of a effort to maintain jobs at a level where they were, but I certainly don't see any reason why we should be growing any industries there. You know, I agree with the guy who said, you know, no more mines, no miners. I mean, I don't think it should be overnight, dramatic, and shocking for everyone, but I certainly don't think we should be encouraging and subsidizing.
Susan, I'm going to give you that word, and I'm going to try to get this thing done here. I appreciate it very much. Let's go to Beth in Niskayuna. Susan's point well taken.
Okay, so anecdote. I knew some very wealthy people that worked for the National Forest Service that moved into a gated community, i.e. you need a pass to get in on Saratoga Lake. In my opinion, disgusting, okay? They're building second homes on Gore Mountain. So I take it that these folks that are coming in and saying they need, you know, talking about economic development, these are people making a lot of money doing what I would consider to be substantial harm. And in speaking to an unnamed individual at NCON, he mentioned that the development in these areas is going to get passed eventually, that NCON will eventually past.
Beth, we are out of time. I am so sorry. You've made a strong statement, and we appreciate the fact that you called. I'd love to give both guys a chance to talk to it, but we're out of time. Thanks so much, Beth. Appreciate it. At least I got you in. Okay, we're out of time, as I say. I want to thank everyone who called in and apologize to anybody who might want to now. I'd also like to thank John Sheehan and Fred Monroe for joining us today. You guys were great, and you really spoke civilly and wonderfully, and I appreciate that a lot. Support for the Vox Pop comes from the Rhinebeck Artist Shops, providing professional picture framing and art supplies in Rhinebeck and at their new expanded store at 188 Main Street in Mannheim in New Paltz, RhinebeckArt.com, and New York State Tobacco Free Community Partners, working to reduce youth and adult smoking rates across the state and help to save lives. New York State Tobacco Free Community Partners at SmokeFreeCapital.org. And Bard College's Master of Arts and Teaching Program, offering a 1-year master's degree and teaching credentials, tuition scholarship opportunities available, bard.edu/MAT for information. Well, thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. This is the kind of thing that you hear on WAMC that you virtually won't hear anywhere else. And I want to thank both Fred and John for being with us today. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Bruce Herbach, a wonderful volunteer who comes in here to answer the phones for us, and we love him for it. Our producer is Patrick Dungis. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.